Hello and welcome to the latest Mooney and Politics podcast, which is being recorded on Monday, January the 17th at about 3:30ish. This episode covers a piece I wrote for Broadsheet exactly a week ago, and that in turn looked at Sinn Féin's discovery of public sector reform, though in my view it's a decade late. Their discovery of it at least does invite us to have a look at their own record at it in the North. Because something quite unusual, though politically significant, happened during the first 10 minutes of the Clare Byrne radio show's Friday gathering on January the 17th. That was on RT Radio 1. I suppose we've become so accustomed to hearing Sinn Féin spokespeople sticking carefully to their talking points and holding the party line that hearing one of them utter even the vaguest criticism of their leadership is jarring. Yet, that's precisely what Sinn Féin's Louise O'Reilly did when she said that, and I quote, she wouldn't use necessarily the words that Mary Lou had used. Not much of a rebuke, you will see, you'll agree. However, the words to which Louise O'Reilly was referring, which she also called inelegant, had come from an Irish Examiner interview a few days earlier, in which the Sinn Féin leader said of the need for public sector reform in the Republic, but we have, in many respects, a system that is constipated, a system that is slow, and a system that needs to be jolted, end of quote. Now, it's not often you hear a Sinn Féin spokesperson upbraid their leader in public and get away with it. But however, in fairness to Louise O'Reilly, her move was not only politically bold, it was strategically wise, in her own interests and indeed in the party's interests. Her disavowal of MacDonald's ill-considered comments came at the start of a discussion where Louise saw that she was going to have to disassociate herself from the very specifics of what she termed Mary Lou's inelegant phrasing, especially if she was to have any hope of doing what her leader had failed to do, namely, to make the entirely fair and correct point that there are systemic problems with the speedy implementation of government decisions. The wisdom of her move was quickly demonstrated as others on the show, including Fianna Fáil's Jim O'Callaghan and the former boss of the Irish Nurses Union, Liam Doran, focused in on what they referred to as the inopportune timing and the annoyance that Mary Lou's comments had caused to many in the public sector. Liam Doran, not a man to shy away from lambasting senior management, made it very clear that the civil and public service had, over the past 20 months, demonstrated the ability to change and be flexible, stressing that this had happened from all levels, from top management to frontline staff. But while there has been a justified anger directed at the language used by MacDonald, that for me is a secondary concern, well, it is for now. The key question is, why has it taken Sinn Féin over a decade to even see that there's a problem? The systemic problems with government efficiency and implementation that Mary Lou has not only now discovered were clearly identified in the wake of the global economic collapse over a decade ago. They were described and catalogued at the time as including the lack of effective parliamentary scrutiny and oversight, the effective unaccountability to the oracles of senior officials, the paucity of state regulation, the underfunding and under-resourcing of state regulatory bodies, the fact that money rarely follows decisions in the Irish model, hence the inexorable lethargy which besets the implementation of many decisions. I know from my own time inside government that you would see cabinet making decisions, but then the Department of Finance saying yes, but that has to come out of money previously allocated in your capital envelope or your current expenditure envelope, and there is no new money to follow new decisions. These arguments even popped up during the 2013 Shannon Abolition Referendum, where both Fine Gael and Sinn Féin together pushed for the abolition of the Shannon. One of the counter-arguments we made to abolition was that the economic crash had taught us that we need more systems of checks and balances in our governmental system, not fewer. By the way, the public accepted this argument and rejected the political chicanery of both Sinn Féin and Fine Gael. The problem and the pity is that every government since that, including the current government, has declined to proceed with the meaningful Shannon reform or to increase proper levels of scrutiny and oversight. Indeed, it's only a couple of weeks ago since I talked about the need for re-establishment of an all-party Dáil Commission on COVID, saying that, and I'm quoting myself, one of the most churlish of the current government's early decisions was to allow the dissolution of the committee oversight on COVID on the 8th of October 2020, shortly after that committee had published its first report, end of quote. Now, there's an even bigger irony, and that is that the current Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, was one of the first political leaders on this island to speak openly about learning the lessons of the crash and implementing the vital changes needed to ensure that we do not slip back into the old ways of doing things. To his credit, In his 2012 Fianna Fáil Lárdaigh speech, Micheál Martin told the party delegates and the wider public that, quote, "We made mistakes, we got things wrong, and we are sorry for that," end of quote. But he did something far more important. He committed himself and his party to learning the lessons of that failure, stating, this is a long quote, "This is a crisis which is just too serious to think it can be solved without a complete reform of our public life. For too long, this has been a political system which only discusses fundamental issues when they become a crisis, and concentrates nearly all power in the hands of 15 people sitting at the cabinet table." He went on to say in the same speech, "If we are really to learn the lessons of the past, if we are to have a political system which can deliver long-term growth and stability, then reform isn't an optional extra. It's an absolute essential." End of quote. This realisation informed his thinking and his approach to policy making for the following years. The pity for him, for Fianna Fáil and for this government, is that he lost sight of it sometime in 2018 or 2019, perhaps when it dawned on him that he might get a turn to briefly hold the levers of power. At that point, he seemed to switch from the realisation that public reform isn't an optional extra, it's an absolute essential, and committed himself instead to the cause of managerial minimalism. But that's an issue for Fianna Fáil. I am here today to talk about Sinn Féin. Now, the positive news for them is that they've come to the same realisation. The fact that it's nearly a decade after everyone else and comes with language that obscures how they define the problem is bad. The reality is that they're offering no solutions. That's actually worse. And if you want to make it even worse again, let's look at their own record. Because if you look at the part of the island where Sinn Féin is not only in government, but one of its most senior ministers, Conor Murphy, serves at Northern Ireland's Minister for Finance and Personnel and is responsible for public sector reform, you won't find much cause for hope. The only reform I can find directly associated with Sinn Féin's holding of this office since 2016 has been the changing of the department's name from Finance and Personnel to just Finance. Now, this does not suggest that they have that much interest in the civil and public service sector reform part of that portfolio. Sadly, it's not the only negative sign. Back in 2016, when the Northern Ireland executive was faced with the political burden of implementing the bedroom tax, a Tory cut to welfare payments, rather than addressing the issue head on, Sinn Féin joined with the DUP and the Alliance Party and voted to return welfare powers back to Westminster. So think about that. Having had all the struggle, all the time, all the work on the Good Friday Agreement, all the work on taking powers from Westminster back to Belfast, in the blinking of an eye, Sinn Féin voted to hand a chunk of them straight back to Westminster. Not only that, they handed the power back to the very same Tory government whose policy was hurting the people Sinn Féin continually tell us are the ones they are there to defend. In his book Burned, billed as the inside story of the North's Cash for Ash scandal and the Northern Ireland's secretive new elite, Sam McBride details how Sinn Féin's finance minister in Northern Ireland, Martina Molore, was, this is a quote from page 267 of the book, was in constant contact with unseen and therefore publicly unaccountable senior Republican figures about the complex legal question, end of quote. The complex legal question in this case was how they dealt with the Cash for Ash scandal and how did they recoup some of the lost money. So here we had the Sinn Féin finance minister taking weeks, and I do mean weeks, to secretly seek the permission of backroom figures, many linked to the provisionals, before agreeing to impose cost-cutting measures on the RHI scheme that would have saved tens of millions. And therefore his discussions were not taking place with other ministers and senior civil servants. For the most part, they were taking place with shadowy figures in the background of Sinn Féin. So much for Sinn Féin's operational belief in public openness, transparency and accountability. But this isn't a historical problem, not that 2016 or 2017 is history. Late last year, despite widespread criticism of the performance of Capita, that's the private company contracted by the Northern Ireland executive to deliver the Personal Independence Payment System, what's called PIPS, a Sinn Féin minister, Deirdre Hargey, renewed the company's contract for a further 2 years without even going through a public procurement process. Now, mention any of this to any Sinn Féin member and their stock answer is that the British government is responsible for what happens in the North and that they are powerless. Well, how could they be other than powerless when you have Sinn Féin ministers voting away what powers they have rather than exercising them? And when they do exercise them, they do it in consultation with figures who are behind the scenes. Now, Willie O'Dea accurately summed up the Sinn Féin policy approach to every problem and every question in this 6-second quote.
The Sinn Féin policy can be reduced to one single sentence. Lads, the answer is yes. Now, what was the question?
It was a neat summation of their approach. But as the latest polls show, attacking Sinn Féin for its blatant populism alone is not sufficient. The desire for change in how we do things is real. People do not feel the government grasps the scale of the problems they daily face. So Sinn Féin rides the crest of that wave, and there's nothing wrong with that. But it will take more than just surfing on the surface for that wave to wash them into government. Mary Lou's Examiner interview shows that she has the facility to echo the public's concerns back in them. But the carelessness of our language on such a crucial issue shows that she does not yet grasp the nature of the problem, nor does she understand how difficult it will be to drive through the necessary reforms. That glaring vulnerability will not cost her in the polls. Well, not for now. There will be no major dent in Sinn Féin's potential support levels until one or two of the main government parties make the changes necessary to show voters that they both understand the scale of the problems and have the ambitious and detailed plans to address them at that scale. I believe at least one of the parties can do this. I ought to think they will. The question is when, and the risk for each of the parties, and particularly the party I once was a member of, is that they will wait too long to do it. So that's this week's Mooney on Politics podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. Can I just put, maybe not an advertisement, but just maybe can I suggest to you that if you are interested in issues around employee relations, industrial relations, and particularly the more so the issue of remote working and how that's affecting the workplace, can I suggest you listen into a podcast with which I'm also involved called Berg Bites. Now, you can find us on your favourite podcasting platform by searching for Berg, which is B-E-E-R-G, Bites, B-Y-T-E-S. It's hosted by my colleague Tom Hayes. We posted one last week, which is a very, very good discussion on the issue of remote working and how maybe we forget the fact that remote working is only beneficial and is only attractive to a certain percentage of the working population. And for a lot of people, frontline workers, people who work in situ, people who work in situations, people who work in factories and shop floors and retail, in hospitality, that working from home, remote working isn't an option. And why should they lose out when there's a change happening in the workplace for the workplace situation for others and not be able to benefit for themselves? So I hope you enjoy that. I hope you've enjoyed this Mooney on Politics podcast. And I will be back with the next episode fairly soon. With any luck, I know I say this every single week, that I intend to get back to a regular schedule on these things. I'm sorry that I haven't. I can only blame the pressure of work. But I will definitely try this week to have the next episode up before Wednesday, maybe on Wednesday, and then get back to a regular time slot after that. Okay, hope that's it for this week. Take care of yourselves, and hopefully we will get news of when the pubs and restaurants and hospitality start to get back to normality, and that the rest of us can start getting back to some normality. Until then, goodbye.